News with Nick. Let's get it started here in the June 3rd. It is a Friday, and it is 2016, the month of June, and the day of 3rd. Okay, getting to the news. Wait, let's make sure everything's going good. So, of course, there was an emergency right before the show. As usual, I try to start the show, and my my streaming software goes, invalid key RTMP sock full overflow. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. I didn't overflow any socks. I didn't RTMP, and I didn't change the stream key. So it must be fine. It must be the right password. Go to Ustream. I'm like, no, the password hasn't reset. I'm not able to stream. The way I fixed it was I had to go to Ustream. I had to stream like manually for a second, like through the browser, and then I had to stop streaming, and then I could restream through the software again. Very strange, and I hate computers, and nothing ever works in the Ustream morning, in the News with Nick mornings. Boy, my head's all over the place. We got a lot to get to, though. I always say that, but really, I feel like there's a ton of stuff here. My lightning round alone is like 7 things long. Okay. Crap. See, I'm not even prepared. On June 1st, 2016, two men were killed in a murder-suicide in an engineering building at the University of California, Los Angeles, otherwise known as UCLA. The gunman was identified as Indian-born 38-year-old PhD student Manik Sarkar. Manik Sarkar. The victim was an assistant professor, William Scott Klug, who had taught Sarkar during his time at UCLA. A woman, later described as Sarkar's wife, was also found dead in Minnesota during the subsequent investigation into the shooting and is suspected to have been killed by Sarkar before the UCLA shooting. Minnesota? That's far away from UCLA, right? So what did he do, drive there? Let's see. The shooting occurred at the fourth floor office of Bolter Hall. Two handguns and a suicide note were found near the two bodies. Shortly after the shooting, LA Times was told by police that from the appearance of the bodies, the student may have killed a professor, and at least 3 shots were fired in the shooting. So he walks into the building with his gun, walks up to a professor's office, goes, "Hey, professor, you gave me a B. I deserved an A. And now you're going to get the G." G for gun. Yo, G. I don't know what's happening. The initial reports of the shooting mistook its nature as an attempted mass shooting, prompting a massive... If you hear a gunshot on a campus, it's like, oh, it's a mass shooting, it's a mass shooting. Prompting a massive police response. School officials put the campus on lockdown as hundreds of SWAT officers and Los Angeles police officers began searching the area. A nearby hospital and 3 elementary schools were also put on lockdown. Oh my goodness. For one shooting in an office. When the lockdown was lifted just after noon, classes at UCLA were canceled for the day, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's go over the news story.
A gunman opening fire in the engineering building. Gunned down inside his fourth floor office, UCLA professor William Klug. His killer, his former student, Manik Sarkar, a 2013 mechanical engineering PhD.
That sure is an odd background audio issue, isn't it? That's not me. That's the video. Oops.
Graduate, returning in the last couple of days to his old campus, say police, to kill 2 professors.
He was only able to locate one. The second faculty member was off campus. Sarkar was heavily armed. He had 2 semi-automatic pistols, one that he used for the homicide and the other that was in his backpack. He had multiple magazines of ammunition and multiple loose rounds of ammunition. He was certainly prepared to engage multiple victims.
As police...
Everybody tries to look for a reason for this. Well, first of all, there is no good reason. This is a mental issue. Mental derangement, but it was tied to a dispute over intellectual property. Okay, so let's go over, let's see if we can find out what's going on. Blah, 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 blah. Sarkar had accused King of stealing his computer code and giving it to someone else, according to police. What does that even mean? You stole my computer code. And giving it to someone else? Like his password? Stealing his computer, like his programming code. Okay. I've been sitting here for hours wondering what that meant, and it just occurred to me. Okay, he was a programmer. He wrote some computer code, and the professor apparently used it for someone else's thing. And oh, so okay, so he's mad about that. He wasn't mad about getting a B, not an A. Okay, and so let's see. When detectives arrived at Klug's office on Wednesday morning and found the bodies, they also found a note from Sarkar listing his home address in Minnesota and asking someone to go check on my cat. Immediately, we were highly suspicious. That made me uneasy about what we would find when we got to Minnesota. And then police in Minnesota strung crime scene tape around a gray split-level home in whatever address that is. Public records listed the residence there. Blah, blah, blah. And this is just saying the news confirmed that the person inside was married to Sarkar on June 14th, 2011. Blah, blah, blah. So they went to his house to check on his cat or whatever, and then they found the wife dead. But it's not saying, like, Beck said it appeared the woman had been dead from a gunshot wound for maybe a couple of days. And then it doesn't really say how he got to UCLA. Did he fly? It does say it. Sarkar drove from Minnesota to Los Angeles, but it's unclear how long he was in L.A. before Wednesday's shootings. Shooting. Okay, cool. That's a pretty fun story. Oh, yeah, and here's a Twitter account I found. It is just a guy who was at UCLA, and he's just taking a bunch of pictures of a bunch of SWAT members from outside his building. He's like, we're sheltered in place. And he took a picture of how he locked himself into one of the IT rooms. And it is a picture of they've moved some huge printers over near the door. And they've taken the printer power cables. And instead of having them plugged into the wall, they have them tied around the handle of the room. So that if you start pulling on the handle to try to get in with your gunbow, you can't open it because there's just power cables. I don't know. And then, so he's tweeting this, and someone responds, and they're like, well, way to show the shooter how to beat your security system. And they're like, what? You think the shooter's A, on Twitter, B, can tell what door this is in all of the doors in that building? I don't know. Unless everyone's using the power cable tied to the handle trick, which I doubt that. The chat says, he gets a C- for mass shootings. Nice. Okay. Ooh, this is a quickie. Prince died of accidental overdose of opioid fentanyl, medical examiner says.
Toxicology report in Minnesota, they can only release two things about a person when it comes to their death: the cause of death and the manner of death. And I will read those to you. I'm looking at the report right now. It has literally come out in the last couple of minutes. The cause of death here says that he self-administered fentanyl. And if you don't know what fentanyl is, it is basically the new heroin, but much, much stronger.
The new heroin.
It is the strongest opioid painkiller you can get. It is often used by cancer patients. It usually comes in patches. Although sometimes you can get it in pill form, it is causing and wreaking havoc across the United States.
Wow, what a lady. Oh my goodness, so yesterday, this lady, she's like trying to make us all scared of the new heroin. Let's see. Espresso D says accidental overdose, aren't they all pretty much accidental? I mean, no, not if you're like, I'm tired of this, I'm taking all these drugs. Cool, right? So I'm at work yesterday. I'm sitting in a meeting. You know how you sit in meetings and then you have to have conversations beforehand? So I don't remember what someone said. Like, did you hear about you don't want to go over to Brazil because there might be terrorists there or something? And then someone else goes, well, it's pretty much as dangerous in this country with all the shootings going on. I'm like, whatever. There are no shootings going on. UCLA, that's the only shooting that even happened this week. I don't even think it happened in Chicago. Yeah, the only reason that UCLA thing was even news was because it happened at a college. If that happened anywhere else, it would not have even been a news story. It would have been like, oh, a shooting. So a gun went off. Someone gave another person the G. Okay, so toxicology tests for Prince concluded that the entertainer died from accidental overdose of fentanyl. So do you guys think he was addicted to that painkiller thing? Probably. Fentanyl prescribed by doctors for cancer treatment can be made illicitly and is blamed for a spike in overdose deaths. It's 25 to 50 times more potent than heroin and 50 to 100 times more potent than morphine. That sounds like a good deal then. So say it's like four times as much or three times as much, or I don't know how much it would be, but it's 25 to 50 times more potent. So that's good. What does that even mean? That doesn't mean like, so if you took one heroin, that doesn't, and you didn't die. That doesn't mean, or if you took one fentanyl and you didn't die, and let's say it's the lowest level, it's 25 times more potent than heroin. That doesn't mean you could take 25 heroines and not die, right? We need a doctor to figure this out. Unless it does mean that by weight, maybe it does mean that. I don't know. Here's a picture. Here's a video. We can find out how dangerous fentanyl is. I'm learning stuff, guys.
It can go by the street names China White or China Girl, or the more scientific names Actic, Duragesic. Most know it as fentanyl.
China White.
And over the last year, overdoses from drugs like this are up more than 80%. Fentanyl is part of a class of drugs known as opioids. It is also one of the most powerful narcotics used in medicine. Some context, you know morphine. Fentanyl is up to 100 times more powerful. That's part of the reason it is diverted or stolen from pharmacies and hospitals or made illegally in labs. Dealers will frequently add fentanyl to heroin to give it more of a kick.
They will? They'll be like, I'm going to waste some of my fentanyl and put it in this heroin.
It's called cutting the heroin, and especially if you're not expecting it, it can be deadly. That's because fentanyl is also 50 times stronger than heroin. It is so powerful that just a quarter of a milligram can be fatal.
Actually, they probably do that, because then you're like, oh, this was pretty good heroin. I'm gonna go to that guy again. I'm going to go to fentanyl heroin man. Two horses die in races before the Preakness. I don't know if you guys know what the Preakness is. That is the race that happens after the Kentucky Derby. So it goes Kentucky Derby, Preakness, Belmont. Those are like the big three, right? Everyone knows that. Two racehorses died Saturday at the Pimlico Racecourse, site of the Preakness Stakes. Homeboy Chris collapsed after the first race of the day while walking back to his barn. The horse, which was a 9-year-old gelding, won the race, but then it fell over of a heart attack and died. The boy that takes care of him said that he'd probably gone 100 yards and got wobbly and fell over, and he was pretty much dead when he hit the ground. Yikes. Campitelli said they thought the horse was in really good health, and why he died is still a bit of a mystery. They're thinking at this point it was some sort of heart attack. Ruptured aorta or something like that. Yikes, that's going to be me. I'm going to be running along, and I'm like, whoa. Runner's heart attack time. And then another horse called Promedia, a 4-year-old filly. Fractured a cannon bone in her leg while running on grass in the fourth race and was euthanized on the track. The horses will have necropsies performed at the New Bolton Center Hospital. Well, what are you going to learn from the first one? Or the second one, rather? I guess you could learn if it had a weak leg to begin with, but it's like, please find out why the horse died. Well, you shot it in front of everyone on the track. No. Is there any other possibility as to why it died? You're not going into this with an open mind, necropsy doctor. Chat says the horse died of an accidental overdose. Okay. Anyway, I wonder, so this must happen a lot, I heard, that a horse just gets injured and you got to shoot it, right? That's like the stereotypical thing. My brain is not working on all cylinders right now. I'm not able to think of things. But I wonder if they have like a kit at the track where it's like, oh, the horse broke a leg. Bring out the death kit. And it's like a a little thing, like it has curtains on wheels. So you roll it out and then everyone knows that if the curtain on wheels thing comes out, or maybe it's just a bunch of people that come out with curtains and they hold it up. So they go, poof, horse is dead. Will two horses that died on the Preakness Day, will their deaths inspire horse racing reform? A tragedy struck twice during the Preakness Stakes this year on the rain-soaked, muddy, blah, 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 blah. So it talks about the two guys that we just talked about. If this had been, say, the Indy 500, and two drivers were killed in preliminary races on a track slickened by rain, the race would likely have been canceled. But the Preakness Stakes went on. After all, the deaths of two horses were just an unfortunate thing that occurs, as the Maryland Racing Commission Executive Director Mike Hopkins referred to it. These unfortunate things happen too often. A 2012 investigation by the New York Times discovered that an average of 24 horses, that's more than three every day, die each week at racetracks. Wow, across the country. So, this is crazy. Hopkins insisted that while the horse racing industry is worth a hefty $1 billion to Maryland's economy, the safety of the horses is a top concern. Veterinarians that work with me have no qualms about scratching a horse if they don't think the horse is healthy enough to run. Not scratch it. Like, I don't think you're healthy enough to run. I'm going to scratch your belly. Scratching it as in it's not running. Like, it will skip the race. Now, on one hand, yes. The people who own these horses are, like, they've invested a lot of money into these horses. They don't want them to, like, break a leg or die. On the other hand, the horses are useless if they don't race. So you're probably beating them and being like, race harder. And also, drink this smoothie made of hot dogs. It's not sloppy tracks that are the main cause of horses' injuries and deaths during races. The usual culprit is that all the drugs the racehorses are fed. Nice. Which can mask pre-existing health conditions. Although giving racehorses anabolic steroids is against the law in the U.S., they are commonly given legal performance-enhancing drugs that may include pain medication, anti-inflammatory drugs, muscle relaxants, Viagra, and even the same chemicals used to beef up cattle and pigs before they're slaughtered. I think we're just going to gloss over the Viagra part, and you can use your own brain for that one. And when the racing days are over, the horses are shipped off to slaughterhouses outside of the country. About 10,000 of them are killed every year. Okay. Well, and it says, fortunately, as people become aware of the cruelty of horse racing in the world, the sport, much like greyhound racing, is losing popularity. Yeah, but still. By the way, if you ever go to a racetrack, it is just lonely men sitting around. They're fat. They're drinking beers. They're looking at their horse racing guides, and they're like, yeah, I'm gonna bet 25-32 on the 2-3 split of the 18. And then you wait 25 minutes, and then horses run, and then you go, I was wrong again. Can't afford rent. All right. Okay, we need to get to the story of the day here. Zoo director says we'd make the same decision of shooting a gorilla. Okay, so here's what happened.
How this could have happened. Zoo officials say a four-year-old boy went under a rail, through protective wiring, and then over a moat wall, dropping 15 feet into the water below. Zoo officials say the situation was so urgent that they had to act quickly. They took the gorilla's life, killing him, they say, in order to save that little boy. They say that they had no option. They said any use of tranquilizers just would have taken too long. That little...
Those people that are screaming in the background are part of another video we're going to see in a second.
Boy was in the moat for about 10 minutes. The gorilla tossed the boy and at times stared at the boy. That was until the dangerous animal response team took action and killed the gorilla. The zoo director, Thane Maynard, said it was the only option, and he also released this statement saying, we are heartbroken about losing Harambe, but a child's life was in danger and a quick decision had to be made by our dangerous animal response team.
All right, this has got everyone in the country up in arms, okay? If you're not in the country, you don't know how up in arms it is. This is almost as bad as Cecil the Lion. People are so mad. Okay, so this lady's at the zoo. We could be idiots and we could be like, oh, she's probably texting, she's probably drunk, she's probably high on fentanyl. We don't know. Anyway, I'm sure she's a horrible parent. That's not the point. I mean, it is kind of the point. But anyway, for some reason, her kid just starts screwing with the fence, climbs under it or climbs over it in the cage, and then climbs over the next barrier somehow. I don't know. It's not very clear. I've seen no pictures of this fence. Maybe someone has that. I've seen no, theory as to what exact path this kid took through the enclosure. Maybe someone threw him in, for all we know. But somehow a kid lands inside the gorilla nest, gorilla cage. And then he proceeds to be approached by the gorilla.
Hey, somebody call me too!
Hey, my God, I don't know how to go.
Okay, I'm going to go back. You can hear people in the background going, oh, someone call 911. Somebody call the zoo. So when this video starts, it is focused on the corner of the enclosure, and there's just a huge gorilla. And you can't even see a kid, but behind the gorilla is a kid sitting in the corner.
Mommy's right here.
He falls in, and the mom's like, I'm up here. Mommy's up here. Stay calm. That sound is obviously the waterfall in the background.
Hey, somebody call the zoo!
Hey, oh my God, I don't know how to go.
Somebody call 911. Somebody call the zoo. Okay, so the gorilla is in the corner. I'm going to skip ahead till when we see the kid. Oh, wait, here it is. Okay, so the kid, he steps away. Then you see the kid. And then the gorilla grabs the kids by the leg, the kid by the leg, and starts running away. And he repositions himself, and now the monkey is holding the kid by the leg, and then he's just looking up at everyone. It's crazy. The kid's just sitting in the water. Can you imagine? You're like sitting in the water. There's this huge gorilla. Okay. My son fell into the zoo. I think that's what she just said on the phone. Okay, so at this time, the gorilla stands the kid up, like, and then gives him a wedgie. I'm not even joking. So he stands the kid up in front of him. He's, like, treating him like a... I don't know what he's treating him as. Some people are saying he's treating him as, like, another primate or something. So he stands the kid up, and then he, like, screws with his shorts. Like, how does a gorilla even know what shorts are? And how do you know you're supposed to wear them? Like, why would he even touch the kid's shorts? That doesn't even make any sense. Like, what's this thing around your butt? So anyway, he stands the kid up, and he screws with his shorts, giving him a wedgie. And then he grabs him again and runs off again. So let's watch that.
Sam, be calm. Be calm. Good, good. Be calm. Be calm.
Oh, my God.
And that's about... There's nothing to see after that, pretty much. It runs off, and then it runs around the corner, and the camera pretty much can't follow it at that point. And then you're told that later on... zoo officials come out, and they're watching the gorilla, and they're like, he is very aggressive. He's standing in a very aggressive manner, and we had to shoot him. So they shoot him, and everyone's pissed.
This in your Facebook page, that the posts that went viral. I have watched this video over again, and with the silverback's posturing and tight lips, it pretty much is the stuff of any keeper's nightmares, and I have had many while working with them. Explain that. What more is your expert eye seeing in that video?
You know, he was a young, robust male, and he was doing exactly what male gorillas do, and that's protecting his group. You know, had it been a female, you know, that got to the child, things may have...
Wow, how sexist. It's like, oh, it was a man, so it was definitely dangerous.
No, you can't be complacent when working with animals as large.
I don't know. I'm skipping this. This is stupid. So basically, it's a whole argument across the country. It's like, no, we had to shoot it. Most people are saying they had to shoot it to save the kid. Now, the other question is a kid's life more valuable than a rare gorilla's life? And probably not. So, I mean, obviously, no one's going to admit to that. But then again, there were people that were like, that loved the gorilla, right? They're super sad. They're like, you basically killed my best friend. How many people do you think cried, like literally cried emotions over the gorilla dying? Not like some lady at home that just heard it on the news and was like, oh my God, the gorilla. Like someone who actually hung out with the gorilla or was like its caretaker or something. I wonder. And how many people would have cried if the kid was dead? That's how you have to weigh it. You weigh it by buckets of tears that are going to occur, and then whoever has the most tears, don't kill that one. That would have taken too long, probably, to figure out. Okay. Four climbers dead on Everest. Danger has long been part of the allure of climbing the world's highest peak. Avalanches killed 35 climbers on Mount Everest in the past 2 years, including 16 in one devastating day in 2014. And now in 2016, the climbing season has claimed its first victim since last Thursday. Four people have died on the 29,000-foot peak, including a Sherpa. Everest is a mountain of extremes, said John Kedrowski, a geographer and climber who summited Mount Everest in 2012 when 10 climbers died. The recent deaths coming so quickly on the heels of one another have rattled climbers who are beginning their descent as the Everest climbing season nears its end. April and May are the most common months to attempt to climb because there tends to be less wind, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so. Let's see. Oh, no, I don't want to read that. We got a bunch of Everest things. So, a life wasted. Mother of Mount Everest victim wants answers. From half a world away, Maritha Stridham was following her daughter's progress on Mount Everest last week through a series of satellite pings from the climber's phone. Then the pings stopped. And soon after, Stridham got the news every parent dreads. Not through a phone call, she says, but by reading a news article online. Her daughter had died of altitude sickness in the arms of her husband. Oh, no. Oh, that is actually sad. He was climbing, too. As the couple attempted to climb the world's tallest peak to prove that vegans can do anything. She was one of the four climbers who died on Mount Everest in a grim span of 4 days. So trying to prove that vegans can do anything, she died. Now, who knows? No one's ever said that a vegan has never climbed Mount Everest. Or maybe someone has said that, but I haven't heard that. I was worried when the ping stopped and we started calling, but no one would give us any answers. So my other daughter Googled and found the Himalayan Times that my daughter had passed away. Oh, goodness. You had to Google a news story to see if your daughter was okay on Everest. She still wants answers, though. She believes her daughter, known by friends and family of Maritha, was in the death zone for too long. The death zone refers to altitudes higher than 8,000 meters, or 26,200 feet, where the risk of dying significantly climbs. Get it? Climbs? There is little oxygen here, so altitude sickness is common and can be deadly. Temperatures tumble, winds intensify, and frostbite can hit any exposed part of the body. The ground is icy, so falls are not uncommon. No one is supposed to stay in the death zone longer than 16 to 20 hours, and if you stay there longer, you will be dead, Stridham told CNN. So the mom knows a lot about this, or at least claims to. So what's she so mad about? The couple reached Everest's south summit on Friday but decided to turn around and descend when Stridham began feeling poorly. Several Sherpas and her husband struggled to carry her down the mountain, but she collapsed the next morning. She was evacuated to Kathmandu the next day by helicopter. Oh, interesting. She felt weak and... Sorry, what? Gropple was evacuated to... She felt weak and decided to turn around. What Rob knows is that she felt ill. She got medication. She looked a bit better. And when he tried to get her down to Camp 3, she suddenly collapsed. So here's the thing. When you're climbing Mount Everest, you got all these camps up along the way. And then there's base camp at like 25,000 feet, which if you think about it, it's like that's pretty high up. You've already gone way high up, and then you've set up this camp. And then from that point, you go up to try to get to the summit. Now, everything I know about mountain climbing is from that movie, The Vertical Limit. And it's not even called The Vertical Limit, it's just called Vertical Limit. So, this mom's upset. Someone died on the mountain. But here's the thing. You go up and you start dying, and it's like, well, I'm also dying, and I'm climbing. I can't focus on me not dying and also save you so you get to freeze. Sorry, that sucks. But that's the way it is. And next year, a bunch more people will try to climb it. Why would you do this? I would never do this. I know people are like, yeah, it's magical. It's the greatest mountain on earth. We got to climb it. And they spend $15,000 for this trip, minimum, probably, to get Sherpas or stay there or whatever the accommodations are. And then you go, well, let's try to climb Everest and let's try not to die. That doesn't seem worth it. It seems like a high percentage that it's going to suck. Minimum, you're going to come back and you're not going to have fingers because it frostboat them off. All right, let me check my show notes here. We got the shooting. We got the death. We got the gorilla. We We got the Preakness deaths. Yeah, it's not a good week for animals. It's not a good week to be a horse or a gorilla, I guess. You guys ever go to news.google.com and you're trying to check the news and then you see a bunch of news there and you're like, wow, that's a bunch of top news that's about things I like. That's weird. And then you realize you're under the suggested for me section because it tracks you. Are you guys mad that Google's tracking you? I'm not. It's whatever. Somehow it knows that I want to hear about Minecraft, the Dallas Cowboys, and like Microsoft news. I don't know. And tech news. Who knows? I guess it just looks at what I Google all day long or what sites I go to, and then it just knows I like Minecraft. I don't even know how it would know that. I guess sometimes I'm Googling, like, what are Minecraft recipes, and then it tracks that. Weird. Oh, and then, so here's the other thing about Windows, is that it's going to update me to Windows 10. Do you think I'm going to wake up one more? I'm so scared. I'm going to wake up one morning, and my computer's going to be updated to Windows 10, and also none of the graphics cards work anymore. Too bad. So I keep quitting the little app. Like, I force quit the program that's supposed to do the update. And I've got all these, I'm reading all these things that people went to bed, and then the next morning, it was on Windows 10, or they did something like delay 5 days, right? They just tried to hit it out 5 days, and then 2 hours later, the computer started updating. It was like, he said 5 days, but maybe he's not looking. I'm updating! I'm pretty scared of that. What's the chat saying? Oh, no one's in the chat. Okay, cool. That's nice. Mom charged with child abuse after letting son drive a golf cart. On the second day of her dream vacation on an exclusive Bald Head Island, Julie Mall went with her family to the beach to catch a sunset. Her 11-year-old son asked to drive the golf cart back to their $1,000-a-day rented cottage. It was dusk. No traffic on the path, and his father would sit next to him. A two-block, 30-second ride, she said, sure. What could go wrong? Little did she know, there would be several men lying in the road, and her son would become a murderer. Now, in the next four hours, Mall says she was pinned to the ground by police, repeatedly accused of being drunk, frog-marched barefoot aboard a ferry in handcuffs, jailed in leg irons, and charged with child abuse. Mall's case, which occurred on a laid-back luxury resort island where golf carts take the place of automobiles, is an example of how an encounter with police can spiral out of control, even in the most idiotic of settings. I don't think I'm on, like, an anti-cop site, by the way. I'm on the charlotteobserver.com. Okay, let's see. Let me see if I can get some more information on this. A woman says she was arrested, charged with child abuse, and detained for hours for letting her 11-year-old son drive a golf cart. Julie Mall tells the Charlotte Observer that her son asked to drive the cart 2 blocks, and she let him. And then an officer pulled them over and accused her of being drunk, which she denies. She said more officers showed up, and she was arrested. Video shows a screaming Mall on the ground being handcuffed by an officer with a knee on her back. All right, so we're going to play this video. I don't know. I got to find more news on this. This doesn't make any sense. Is there any information I can find? Mom arrested. Mom who was arrested for letting son drive golf cart. Okay. Here's a video. Maybe we can find out what's going on. Nope. It's just everything is citing the Charlotte Observer. There's no information.
It's a vacation nightmare. These images show officers pinning a mother to the ground in handcuffs, charged with child abuse for letting her 11-year-old son drive a golf cart. ABC's Ryan Smith is here with the story behind that tape. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, George. This woman's luxury vacation turned into a tumultuous ordeal, and now their lawyer telling us they hope videos like these hold police officers accountable.
What is this guy doing?
So they're she's yelling a lot.
The moment Julie Mall's idyllic family...
And the husband started recording.
After a police stop for letting her 11-year-old son drive a golf cart. That evening, the Malls were in...
That's what she keeps saying. I have seen no evidence that she was pulled over for letting the son drive a golf cart. This is so weird. This is such a weird story because there's no quote from the police or something. The police aren't saying, like, yes, we saw the 11-year-old driving a golf cart and we stopped him.
Enjoying a sunset on picturesque Bald Head Island. Julie and her husband Scott even snapping this selfie together. Then, according to the Charlotte Observer, their son asking to drive the cart back.
Again, according to the Charlotte Observer. So she talked to one newspaper or one news source and everyone's just picking it up based on what she said.
I sort of fall to my knees and then he pushes me down into the ground, puts his knee on my back.
As Maul waits for other officers to arrive, the situation escalates. With her husband recording, watch as police cuff her and carry her away, hauling her off to jail later, charging her with resisting arrest and child abuse. It's a shocking incident for a place like this, a scenic paradise off the coast of North Carolina, accessible only by boat, with no cars allowed, only golf carts driven by those 16 and up. The arresting officer claiming Julie Maul was at fault, that she failed to surrender her hands to be handcuffed.
Ooh,
and saying the
Mauls we do have a report.
Intoxicated, uncooperative, and obstinate, risking injury to their son by letting him drive. Eventually, the charges against Julie Maul were dropped.
Okay. All right. Cool. So we found out some information. So we found out that it sounds like the police did pull her over for having the son drive and then decided that she was probably drunk, which you think she wasn't drunk on her vacation driving a golf cart around, and then she gets all yelly, and then they arrest her. I don't know. I guess cops suck. Okay, so what time is it? All right, we're 40 minutes in, and we are going to click on over to the lightning round now, where we're going to speed through some of this stuff. All right, congressional report says NFL meddled in NIH study on football and brain disease. A congressional investigation has found the NFL tried to influence a National Institute of Health study on the link between football and brain injuries before pulling its funding when NIH thwarted its attempts. Yikes! We've obtained the 91-page congressional report, which details the NFL's improper strong-arm efforts. According to the report, the NFL was displeased with the choice of Boston University's Dr. Robert Stein and pulled its $16 million contribution when NIH refused to change its selection. So they picked a doctor who was going to do the report. They're like, ooh, we don't want that guy. He's too pro-concussion or anti-football or whatever. And then they're like, fine, we're not donating to you anymore. It's one of the most troubling and disturbing reports I've seen. NFL PA Executive Director Damaris Smith said Monday on SportsCenter, it reaffirms the fact that the league has its own view about how they care for players in the NFL. So, big controversy in the football world. It is coming down. It's not coming down, by the way. It's going to be as big as horse racing for quite a while, probably, and then it will come down. As big as horse racing? It's going to be big like horse racing until we start having to get those little curtains out and be like, oh, you got a concussion, get the curtain. You're dead. Next lightning round topic. Crap. Trump protesters smash door, break through barriers. Oh, this was a few days ago. Protesters lit fire, smashed a door, and threw rocks outside a Donald Trump rally Tuesday night in New Mexico, the latest scuffle to follow the presumptive Republican nominee's campaign. By the way, CNN is so anti-Trump. Let's go to CNN.com right now and see what their front page story is. It is almost always... we got some breaking news here. It's almost always like anti-Trump. Oh, here's another story on the front page. Protesters take to streets after Trump rally in San Jose. Okay, so we can do the exact same story, actually, but we can do it like as in it happened yesterday or this morning instead of happened a week ago. Protesters and supporters of Donald Trump clashed in the streets of San Jose, California.
The most tense moments so far have been when Trump supporters have been leaving this event. We've seen protesters here try to sort of pick them off, try to corner them. There was one woman they egged. They spit in another couple's face. There have been near fights, but for the most part, they've been broken up. Now, I think you can see behind me, police are moving forward. They're changing the perimeter a little bit as protesters have marched down the street. Now, for them,
this is crazy. Every time there's a Trump rally, there's a protest. Protesters waved Mexican flags, and one could be seen burning an American flag, with another saying, Trump's Oh, wait. With another burning Trump's Make America Great hat, some chanted F Donald Trump. F'n Donald Trump's. And Donald Trump has got to go. Oh, here's a picture of the burning hat. Yep. They just burnt it, formed a circle around it with their Mexican flags, and then took a picture, and they were like, for Mexico. Okay, so that's cool. The point is, every time I go to CNN.com's front page, it's like, oh, Trump has a problem. Trump has to explain this. Trump has to explain that. Or sometimes it's like, Hillary unloads on Trump. It's really weird. Like, are they being paid to run these ads by Hillary to just keep putting out negative stuff about Trump? It's like every couple days, it's like the front page story is just Trump. We know. We get it. He's a person, and he's running for president. Does it have to be the front page story every time? Let's do this breaking news. Father is very sorry as son found week after disappearance. The missing 7-year-old boy was found unharmed after searchers spent nearly a week combing dense forest in the northern Japanese island of Hakkaku. He was discovered in a hut at a military exercise ground about 4 miles from the spot where he was left alone in the roadside. So this Japanese couple was like, okay, the kid's being bad. We're just going to leave him in the woods for a little punishment, and then we'll come back and get him. So they come back, and they look for him, and they're like, uh-oh, he's gone. The father of the boy said he was very sorry for what happened to his son and regretted the punishment. I told my son that I am very sorry that I made him go through a very hard situation. He nodded to me. I have been raising him with lots of love. I would like to pour a lot more love over him from now on and watch him growing up. Are they going to take the kid? I mean, this is Japan, so we don't know what they probably are just like, okay, well, yeah, you left your kid in the woods, but at least you didn't let him drive a golf cart. So here, have him back. Three soldiers from Japan's self-defense forces found him on the premises of the military's exercise field Friday morning. A spokesman for the Northern Army 11th Brigade said. The boy told them he was hungry. The soldiers gave him water and 2 rice balls and said that the boy was fine and talking normally. So the military took him back and didn't call someone and be like, the boy told police he reached the building the first night he was missing. He appeared to be in good condition. He spoke coherently and showed signs of mild dehydration. So the military took him in. The small building where he was found is usually used as a rest station, but it hadn't been used recently. Oh, hang on. So the military didn't take him in. Three soldiers found him on the premises Friday morning. Oh, that's today. Or, well, it's not today in Japan, but... Oh, so he hiked, and he found the building himself, and he found supplies in the building. He wrapped himself in 2 futon mattresses that were stored inside to keep warm, and he drank water from a tap outside. Oh, wow, so he found the hut himself, and he stayed there for a week, and then they searched, and they found him there. Weird. Boy's father told authorities that on May 28th, his son disappeared while picking wild vegetables, and then he later admitted they left him on the side of the road. All right. That makes more sense. It didn't make any sense that the military would pick him up, bring him to the hut, and be like, and not call anyone and say, hey, we have a boy, by the way. Does anyone want him? And then the gorilla would be like, I do. I'm a gorilla. Don't shoot me. Okay. Ooh, this is big news. Doctors say postpone or move the Olympics due to Zika. The Summer Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro should be postponed or moved in the name of public health due to widening Zika outbreak in Brazil, more than 100 prominent doctors and professors said on Friday. In an open letter to the World Health Organization, otherwise known as WHO. So if you say something about the World Health Organization, someone else should say WHO. Get it? Now, don't ever say that. That sounds like the easiest joke you could ever do. We make this call despite the widespread fatalism that the Rio 2016 games are inevitable or too big to fail. The writer said in their letter addressed to the WHO director, General Margaret Chan. Why does that name sound familiar? Maybe I've talked to her. Our greater concern is for global health. The Brazilian strain of Zika virus harms health in ways that science has not observed before. Wow. The letter shows a growing gap between the medical field and what to do at the games. On Thursday, Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said that there is no public health concern No public health reason to cancel or delay the games. The CDC's current recommendation is that pregnant women should not travel to areas where the virus is spreading, and that men with the virus who have pregnant partners should use condoms when having sex for the duration of the pregnancy. So Zika is only dangerous to the babies and the elderly? Is that the thing? The World Health Organization released a statement saying that based on its current assessment, canceling or changing the location of the 2016 Olympics will not significantly alter international spread of Zika virus. Will not significantly alter? The organization noted that Brazil is one of almost 60 countries who have reported continuing transmission. Let's see. People continue to travel between these countries and territories for a variety of reasons. The best way to reduce risk of disease is to follow public health travel advice. So I can't tell. And the IOC Olympics Committee says it has no plans to cancel or postpone the games. Wait. In an open letter to the... Oh, okay. So the doctors formed a letter and then wrote it to the World Health Organization. The World Health Organization responded and said, nah, it probably doesn't matter. Now, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe Zika's just like a public scare tactic. See what the chat's saying. Chat's saying, I'm off to a meeting. Okay, that was our only chatter, and he's gone. Cool. So we are on our own, folks. All right. So everyone's all up in arms about the Zika. It's not going to be a big problem. Every year, every time we have this Olympics, it's like, the Olympics are ruined. The facilities are not ready. There's a tiger walking in the hallways at my hotel. The doors don't work. Whatever. I mean, that always happens, and it's always fine, because when we watch it on TV, they don't show us that stuff. They just show us the fun games, and then we go, ooh, America. We love the Olympics, and guess who's going to watch the Olympics? I'm going to watch them all. So that happened. Grandfather, very sorry after accidentally picking up wrong child at school. A 65-year-old Orangeburg County grandfather's case of mistaken identity at an elementary school led to the Orangeburg County Sheriff's Office to investigate the incident. According to an incident report, the grandfather, identified as Joseph Fuller, went to the primary school to pick up his grandson early from school on May 19th. When the grandfather arrived, the report said he noticed a group of students leaving the gymnasium, and he spotted a young man who he thought was his grandson. The report said the grandfather approached the boy, gave him a hug, and said he was there to pick him up early. He asked the boy, who he thought was his grandson, if he was ready to go, and the little boy said yes. He was, an old man walks up to you, you're like, you ready to go? Yes. A teacher's assistant told deputies that she asked the student, was this your granddad? And the student said yes. At that point, the report said the student and the man went to the front office so the boy could be signed out. According to the school, the grandfather was on the approved list of people who couldn't pick up students, right? So he's allowed to go, and he's allowed to pick up his son. The report goes on to say that the grandfather put the child in his car, and his wife, without turning around, handed the boy a Happy Meal. Oh, no! So the wife's there, too. So they get the kid in, and the mom's like, here, eat your McDonald's. And here's a picture of the two kids. They look exactly the same. I'm not even joking. Actually, one's bald and one has hair. But other than that, one's a little darker than the other, maybe. When the couple returned home, the report said, the grandmother noticed that the boy was not their grandson. Oh, no, finally. So they got home. I wonder how far the drive was. I wonder if they were asking the kid about school. How was school today? Good. Blah, blah, blah. The grandparents then return that, so they go, oh my goodness, it's not our grandson. How could you, Don? The grandparents then returned the child to the school, where administrators notified the child's mother. He had a tooth missing in the front, and I know my grandson did not have a tooth missing. That's hard to say. Tooth missing in the front. Immediately, I brought him back to the school, and I am very sorry. The mother was concerned but relieved that the situation was handled and corrected. Interesting. The boys had similarities in haircut style and features, but not in weight or height. And the boy's father blames the school for what happened. If they didn't bring him back, my son could have been gone. This gross negligence on the school's part. My thing is, you know, have prevention so this could never happen again. Okay. Big deal. I don't care. Zika. What's this? Mississippi town's views on desegregation
ruling. We're doing what we think is right, not just for...
A short jaunt east of the former railroad... Who cares? I don't care. A federal judge this month handing down her decision after 5 decades of on and off litigation ordered the middle and high schools consolidated, meaning that all black east side must be integrated with the historically white but now racially split Cleveland High. So in Cleveland, Mississippi, there's this area where there's apparently 2 schools, and one is mostly black and one is mostly white. And the judge has said the school board has issued statements denouncing the decision and has until July to appeal it. Everyone has an opinion on the order, including Cleveland natives Little and Mays. Mays, 21, graduated from Eastside in 2013. Da, ba, 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 ba. We always play against Cleveland High. If you take that away, how are we going to celebrate homecoming? Oh, yeah. If you don't have a rivalry against the blacks or the whites, what are you going to do? So apparently they have to do desegregation, and everyone's all upset. Let's watch this. Let's see if there's any information in this video. I don't know. There's a black fat man sitting at a table trying to describe the situation, and here he goes.
Black folks, but for white folks and for everybody.
Oh, now it's just a text on a video thing.
Cleveland, Mississippi has 11 public schools that are separated by train tracks that used to be right here.
To the east, Eastside High School is 99% African American. On the west side of town, Cleveland High School is a historically white school, they say. Federal judge has issued an order to integrate the schools. That makes no sense. There's no law that says that a white person can't go to the black school, right?
Better. Not just for tomorrow or the next few years, but for your child.
At Eastside, it's more African-American, it's not Caucasian, so we really don't know the full effect of being mixed with different races, you know, getting along with different races.
I think the change, it would be good for the town, but I don't think all the tradition between the two schools should go away by combining.
It's crazy to deal with because we don't see it like that at all. It's
and
completely
to hear
different.
Other people say that about us, you just look at it like, I've never seen this before.
Oh, so those kids were from the white school, and they were probably saying, yeah, we don't think about it as black and white. This is just our school, happens to be white. That's just the other school that happens to be black. We don't even think about that.
We believe as a district that we have made a good faith effort to try to have the most integration we can within our school walls, and we believe we've achieved that.
Whatever. Okay, so someone is meddling. Someone has gone in, and they're like, you know what? You guys don't have enough color in each of your high schools, so we're going to come in, and we're going to say, you guys got to merge the schools just so it can be more colorful. That's a little weird. Unless there's a law that says the black people can't go to the white school or the white people can't go to the black school, that doesn't make any sense. All right, that is about it, unless there is any uplifting news. Let's see about this 7-year-old who gets his dream wheelchair home. Hayden Triggs. Reliance on a wheelchair and diagnosis with both spina bifida and cerebral palsy meant the 7-year-old had trouble playing alongside his classmates and siblings. But that changed earlier this month when... that changed earlier this month when Hayden cut the ribbon on the wheelchair-accessible treehouse of his dreams. The treehouse was constructed in his family's backyard thanks to the Make-A-Wish Foundation and was generously and the generosity of a local contractor, Austin Treehouses, etc. Whenever I hear Make-A-Wish Foundation, I will never forget when I was in, I don't remember if it was middle school or high school, that they were doing just like morning announcements and they were saying, oh, so we have this thing coming up. It's going to be benefiting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And what that foundation does is it gives kids one last wish before they die. Anyway, which is kind of true, but not 100% true. So Make-A-Wish Foundation, yeah, you get to make a wish, but it's not like, hey, kid, you got like a week. you better hurry up on that wish. I mean, I'm sure it sometimes is, but that was hilarious the way they put it. When the final nail was nailed, Hayden's entire first grade class rode the school bus to his home to join him in playing for the first time in his treehouse. Oh, so his treehouse has like a ramp, and it goes up to a house that's in a tree. I don't think that's that exciting. Okay. Well, that's pretty uplifting. A 7-year-old gets to play in his treehouse with a wheelchair. You guys ever at the store, and then there's a wheelchair trying to go through the door at the same time as you? So you know how most people, like, they're on their feet and they're trying to go through the door at the same time. And you're like, oh, go ahead. And now there's a wheelchair, but you got to make eye contact with the wheelchair person to see if who's going to go. And it's super awkward. Never make eye contact with a wheelchaired person because they are lower than you. Like, literally, they're lower than you because they're sitting down. No, I don't know. If I was in a wheelchair, I'd be like, yeah, I'm normal. My legs just don't work. Kind of sucks, but I'm not like, you don't have to feel bad for me. I don't know. Whenever I see a wheelchair person, I immediately run behind their chair and I start pushing them. I'm like, I'm helping. I want to be accepting of you. They go, no, I'm not going this way. Yep. Roll them right into a gorilla cage. Okay. That's about it for the news, I think. It has been News with Nick, 57 minutes long, I guess. You know what? Let me just see if there's anything else. Blah, blah, blah. Zika virus, that thing we don't care about. Nope. There is nothing else. There's always one other thing that, like, I put in the notes and then I completely forgot. Okay. There is nothing else. So, hey, thank you for PCL subscribers. We do need more PCL subscribers. Please spread it around. Or if you are a PCL subscriber, well, obviously, you should only be hearing this if you are. Please up your donation. Unless you're Espresso D, then you're paying enough already. Because you think I like getting up at 5:30 a.m. to do this? You think I like that? I'm laying in bed. Alarm goes off. 5:25 a.m. It's like, you got to do the news. I'm like, you know what? I just want to sleep. I'm full of anxiety. I hate everything. I just want to keep sleeping under these covers where I'm safe for another hour. No. You got to get up. You got to do the news for those stupid people that are paying $5. You think I like that? No. But I would like it more if there were twice as many signers. So please sign up your mother for Mother's Day or Father's Day. Actually, Father's Day, yeah. I'd be like, Father, I don't know what to get you this year. I got you a year's donation, a year's subscription to the Puke in the Gang PCL. Here's your account and password. Also, you're an old man, so please give me your phone and I will sign it up on your feed. You will automatically get news shows every 3.2 weeks and you will get other content. Father, here it is. All right, folks, thanks for coming out to the News with Nick and have a good Friday and a good weekend or whatever.